हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Hey, page 40. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, while Krishna's messenger continued speaking with Nanda, the night ended, O king. The women of the cowherd village rose up from bed and, lighting lamps, worshipped their household deities. Then they began churning the yogurt into butter. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Nanda and Uddhava spent the night in discussing among themselves. Uddhava was not able to pacify them, however, and they could not accept his advice. Then Nanda began to consider things in this way. Uddhava wants to enlighten us by saying Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Do we not know that? At the time of his name-giving ceremony, we heard from Garga, the sun is similar to Narayana, except for Narayana who can be similar or equal to him. Therefore, from Garga, we knew that our son is Narayana. We also realized our son to be Narayana when he killed Putana, Aga, Baka. Then he lifted Govardhan, when he quelled the forest fire, and then the ruler of Varuna Loka offered respects. We also know that Narayana is Paramatma and Parabrahman. Though we know that, we also know irrefutably that he is our son. The proof is Garga's words. Right, so, yeah, Gargacharya said, O Nanda, the son of yours. From Garga's words, though it is proved that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, when we treat him without reverence and offer him our chewed betel nut, satisfaction appears in our minds. If he were not our son, our minds would not be satisfied. Before Krishna's birth, we could meditate on Narayan, our family deity, but now as soon as we meditate on Narayan, Narayan appears directly in front of us. This is the sign of satisfaction of our minds. Therefore, acting like this in relation to our son is not a fault. We are certainly Krishna's mother and father. Krishna's own realization in this matter is also proof. We have seen many times that if we do not give him the chewed betel nut, if we do not lift him on our lap, if we do not hold him to our chest and kiss him, then his face becomes sad. If Yashoda were not his mother, how could she tie him up when he broke the yogurt pots? Seeing his miserable face, when he was tied up, I released him and saw him become pleased. Because we are his mother and father, he accepted scolding, commands, and bondage, though he may be the Supreme Lord. How is it possible to bind up the Parabrahman or the Supreme Lord? But after he killed Chanura and Kamsa and Mathura, everyone said, Krishna, you are certainly the Supreme Lord. But then Devaki said, I am your mother. Vasudeva said, I am your father. Others said, we are your uncles. And others said, we are your brothers, your relatives, your friends. When people saying this invited him to their houses to keep in Mathura, our son, the crest jewel of proper conduct, looking at their faces, fell in a terrible trap. Being unable to come back to his vraja, being very benevolent, I suppose he said to everyone, I am the Supreme Lord, the creator of the universe. Who can be my mother? Who can be my father? Who can be my relative? Just look in the scriptures, it says, I reside in that person who has devotion and with no one else. In those houses where I reside, they are also my mothers and fathers. Though Uddhava has been very intelligent from childhood, he is unable to fathom the depth of my son's heart. Taking the literal meaning of Krishna's words as if they were the intentions of his heart, he has come from Mathura and given us this advice. But my son said something very intelligent in those words. They are my father and mother who show devotion to me. I reside in their house. Therefore, I am sending this message with Uddhava to Krishna. O Krishna, I have devotion to your feet. Be merciful and be pleased with me, so that I can attain you by the devotional process of hearing, chanting, remembering, and offering obeisances. Receiving this message, my son will announce to the assembly of Yadavas, O men of the Yadu dynasty, you are not able to perform devotional activities in Mathura, but Nanda is doing so. Therefore, he is my father, my friend, and dear one. I will go to his house. Saying this, he will come here. At last, Nanda forgot all these deliberations due to the influence of the Santari Bhava of misery, Dainya. Now to continue the text. The gopis rising in the Brahma Muhurta lit lamps, performed worship of the entrances and other things, and churned the yogurt. Right, so Nanda Baba is thinking all these things, so he knows he's the Supreme Lord. But it doesn't matter. He's still his father. You know what I'm saying? Because that other is just a position. It's situational. It's not the relationship itself. Does this make some sense? Or? Yes, no? Yes.
It's not the relationship itself, but this is the basis of relationship.
Yes, I mean, on the platform of tattva, yes, but on the platform of rasa, then no. The point is, in rasa, it's about what is your attraction and how you want to serve the Lord. Like that. Means everybody's connected to the Lord, so by tattva, it is correct, it is the basis. And so everybody has that relationship with the Lord. And so that relationship is there whether one acts within that or not. Right? That is just the facts. So the facts are he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And for the Mathura Vasis, they want to worship him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but at the same time have these familial kind of interactions. But in Braja, then those aspects aren't important. It's just the attraction to serve him in these ways and please him in these ways, as we see Nanda Baba is contemplating. So then it's just a matter of it pleases Krishna to deal in this way. They want to please Krishna, and it pleases Krishna, and this is the way they want to deal. So in the five rasas, you can deal. And so then they have a rasa that they would like to please Krishna through. And so he is pleased by that. So that becomes the main thing. The other, it's a fact. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like, let's say, we're sitting in this room. So it could be the basis is looking at, wow, isn't it? Wow, look at this house. It's so big. Look at the roof and this and that and so many things. And we can talk on that basis and we can be friends. Right? Or it can just be the friends and it doesn't matter if we're in this building or out on the road. You understand? So in other words, the Brajabasis don't require that element of majesty as a medium for their relationship with Krishna. So Vaikuntha is just the majesty. Then Dwarka, then it's the majesty plus the sweetness. And in Braja, it only requires the sweetness. They don't need anything else. Yes.
So it sounds like we have three kinds of, you know, like general groups of devotees. Those who are always focused on Krishna no matter what. It's their swarup. And then those who start, you know, from bottom and then, you know, going through all those levels and then they focus, you know, exclusively on Krishna and the environment and everything else doesn't matter so much. The secondary doesn't matter, but they went through all those stages.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third group seems like they go through the stages and then you know, they choose their own particular level how to interact with Krishna, but they need a, you know, certain environment for that. That's their attachment as well.
Yes. But that's what we're talking about, the jnana shakti. Because you have the icha, the kriya, and the jnana. So icha means you're pleasing Krishna. So all pure devotees will be trying to please Krishna. Kriya, they'll all be doing activities to please Krishna. But in the jnana, it's what is the kind of knowledge that they use in serving Krishna? What's their relationship? So it's either in majesty or in sweetness or in a combination. So that's how you get. So you can say is that pure devotional service is pure devotional service. It's just in the jnana how you see Krishna. You see here, he has the knowledge, because his point is who else but Narayan could do all the activities Krishna did. But that's not the main point. It's about he did those activities to interact with them, to save them. And he becomes happy when they interact in an intimate way as parents, you know, because Nanda Baba is speaking. And if they don't, then he becomes unhappy. Otherwise, why is it that Krishna, with Vasudeva and Devaki, when they saw him as the Supreme Lord, when he offered obeisances, okay, that's okay, but then he extended his yoga maya so that they would think of him again as parents, because that's more pleasing to Krishna than just being God. Because the God position is just who he is, right? Means just that's just the fact of his existence. Then there's the position of the interaction, how you interact. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the person is the prime minister, and so therefore, when they're in their occupational aspect, then people will deal with them like that, and because of that, then things get done. But in his personal relationships, then that's not, he still is the prime minister, but it has absolutely no effect on the relationships. They're still going to deal with him in the intimate way. Now, being the prime minister, then he can get things done. They're going to go on vacation, they can take the jet, or, you know, there's facilities he gets because of that. But it doesn't have any effect on the relationship. So in other words, whatever, let's say in this case, the man's potency or ability is, that's what's expected in the relationship. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, okay, they can, drive, 2 hours to, some place and spend the time there for vacation. Because by his ability, then they have a car and they have that kind of money and that kind of facility. Someone else, then they might fly to the other side of the country or drive to the other side. Someone else will fly to, some other countries or another continent, for their vacation. But the dealings are the same. Right? The family still is dealing and expecting all the interactions and that to be the same. Just the facility is greater. So that he's God, there's greater facility. But that doesn't mean that the interaction is different. So this is the point, is that Braj, he's at home. Vaikuntha, he's at the office. Right? Because people like to hang out with the big guy and interact with the big guy. And then like Dorka, where you can be a little bit more close and more friendly with the big guy, that's cool. If you're there and wherever it is that they're living, and you can have a sit and have some kind of conversation. You know, the prime minister might ask you, well, in your opinion, what do you think we should do on this thing? That's not so much an official position, but just as person to person. But it's still, you're dealing with the prime minister. But in those moments, you may forget. But then, when the general walks in or this or that, and everyone stands up and the general is being respectful, you're dealing with the prime minister, not with your friend. And then maybe after the general goes, then you can sit down and, smile and joke and, eat your, open-faced cucumber sandwich and, stuff like that. If you're at Downing Street or something. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So we're catching that the two can go on without having a problem with each other. But in majesty, it's prominent. So in Dwarka, it's there, but it can go away, but it'll still come back. But in Braj, it doesn't matter. Just if it's the Supreme Lord, then you extend what is the field of activities. That's all. It just extends the field of activities. Does that make sense? So that's why he can contemplate it, but that doesn't actually matter. And from contemplating, he's thinking of Krishna as son, then we see he gets overwhelmed by the influence of the Santri Bhava of misery, of Dainya. And so then all this becomes forgotten. He just becomes absorbed in Krishna. It's not that they can't think of these things, but it's just that it's not really the most important element. You know, only in the thinking, it just brings it down to Krishna as the son, and so therefore they are absorbed. Does that make sense? So, sadhakas will start off all at the same level, and then they'll go up, but they just go up as far as their taste. Right? So the Vaikuntha Wallas, that's their taste. But the Braja Wallas, then that's their taste. Does that make sense? So, if it's in majesty with how you say, majesty, you know, not so much, you know, without the, you know, just, you know, a touch of sweetness because it makes it just more nice. Then you have Vaikuntha itself. Right? Then you add in a little bit more, the majesty has more just the perfection of doing activity. So you have the aspect of this majesty, but it's not so much that he's God, he's human, but he's God who's human. Then you have Ramachandra. You add a little bit more sweetness and you'll get Dwarka. A little more, you'll get Mathura. Right? You add a little bit more, then you'll get these aspects of Vrindavan, which are in lower Goloka. So it's Radha Krishna pastimes, you know, so it has that more sweetness, but it still has the majesty of the grandeur of, you know, going to the Rasa dance in a swan airplane with 10 million maidservants, rather than going on foot with 5,000. Does that make sense? So like that. So Braj means that all the majesty is just dropped. It's not that they don't know it. It's just it doesn't matter. Does that make sense? So whether he's God or not, they'll still love him. You know, Vaikuntha, they love him because he's God. You know, so it's more on the tattva. And then for Braj, it's more on the rasa.
If we take an example of Gop Kumar's journey, he basically gets the mantra, meditates, and then he, you know, goes to, you know, all those places. Mm-hmm. But it seems that he discovers his own self, which is inherent in him, because mm-hmm. apparently he doesn't have much association in support of his personal relationship with Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But then if we look at our path, it's a slightly different path. Because we develop mainly by association.
Yes, but that's why a society is more important. But we have to remember is that association is always there, but he just by that association with his spiritual master and association with the mantra, you know, and the instructions of the spiritual master, then that itself can progress. But at the same time, it's who he's associating with all the way through is always Vaishnavas. So Vaishnavas are Vaishnavas. You can get inspired in your position in the generic aspect of worship of the Lord and commitment and dedication to the Lord. Then you have the specifics of your interest or relationship with Krishna. So he has that through the instruction of his spiritual master and applying that and chanting the mantra. But he is getting Vaishnava association, so he progresses there. But now in the Kali Yuga, then you have the element that people being not as qualified as in other yugas, because other yugas they decide to do something, generally they can focus very nicely. Right? Well, we have the tendency is that we make a determination and then somebody makes a comment or anything happens and we kind of get distracted. You know, okay, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to read, you know, all this, you know, I'm going to read this chapter, Bhagavad Gita and all that, and then someone else turns on the television. You know, and then, you know, things like that, you know. So it's just anything like that, or today I'm fasting and then, you know, someone says, wow, you know, I really want to eat this today. And it's kind of like, that's not bad. You know, it's just so therefore then in Kali Yuga, you have an organized mission. In the other ages, the mission is there, but it doesn't have to be institutionalized. But the same mission is there. You know, the Vaishnava mission is the Vaishnava mission. But in Kali Yuga, it needs to be institutionalized. Because we see it's only by that association and all those things that it works. Because modern man, they're worried about the institutional aspect. They may say they're not. You know, even the anarchists will say, oh, we don't care about that. But who are they associating with, right? Other anarchists. What do? They have their place. They have their rules. They have how they dress. They have how they talk. They have, you know, it's totally institutionalized. It's just they don't see it as that because it's small and it has that personal element. But it's still an institution. Right? So the whole point is in Kali Yuga, then the institutional aspect then works very nicely. And so, therefore, then you have, you know, for all the Vedanta schools, you have the founder Acharya. Even for others, you have their Acharya. And so then there'll be something organized. And then following the organization, they're associating with others in there, and following the instruction of the founder, then the whole thing one progresses very nicely. But it's the same thing, it's just formalized because otherwise we don't really have the qualifications to see the importance and commitment and work those things out. Is that make sense? Yeah. So it's just a matter of, yeah. So it's the same process. The detail may be slightly different, but you know, he's functioning, it's not Kali Yuga. It doesn't matter because, you know, most of the places where he's functioning is above, you know, like that. So, yeah. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's always the same process. That's the important element, is that the scriptures are always talking about the same thing. The acharyas are always talking about the same thing. So there's never any contradiction between scriptures or between the acharyas. Like that, or between the acharyas and the scriptures, there's never any. It's just a matter of the particular flavor of what's being brought out, what's the emphasis at the point, at the particular time. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let us say the kid's been going outside and he's been getting sick or something, so you're going to emphasize the importance of staying inside and health. You know, you're going to talk about health, staying inside, you know, being absorbed in things that can be there, you know, do some reading or, you know, do the homework or, you know, do inside things that you can do. But let's say at another time, you know, from doing that, now they're just lazing around the house. They're not about to do anything else. So now you may push, go out, do something, get some experience in that. And then they'll say, well, wait, you just told me to stay inside. You know what I'm saying? So it depends on the situation. You emphasize different things. But the whole point is overall, it's about the development of the child. So depending on the stage. So at one stage, if they don't know about how to maintain their health, then going outside is not so good. If it's a matter of now they know or it's that's not a danger, then going outside is good. So that's why it'll appear that different shastras and different acharyas are saying different things, but they're not. They're only talking about how to develop one's relationship with the Lord and how and the process of pure devotional service. Because that's the same. It doesn't matter the sampradaya. It's still the same. You know, if we took that Rupa Goswami's verse of Anyabhilashita Shunyam and explained that to any other sampradaya, they would greatly appreciate it. That in one verse, pure devotional service has been described so clearly. like that. That's there. But just in the expression of that, the particular rules, the language, the relationship that they want with the Lord is the ultimate goal. How they express that, that's going to be, that'll be different according to the time, the place, the circumstance, the people, all those kind of things. Does that make sense? So then they're preaching for a particular group. Is that like that? Like, there are Shris and Madhwas and in the north, but you don't really hear much about them. You hear about them from the south. So it was specifically designed for that group. Anyone, anywhere can follow it, but it was specifically for that mentality. And it works perfectly. Does that make sense? And then you'll see others, then they preach in the north, the Vallabhas in the north, or like this, then they do better there. Does that make sense? You know, so they design it for that place. But Lord Chaitanya says his mission is for the whole world, and his process is for everybody. You know, so the idea is that, no, we're from a particular place, we should follow our own, you know, nature. Then that's a misunderstanding of Lord Chaitanya's mission, the universality of it. Especially if we think that our local customs and behavior is, what do you call it?
Universal.
It's just like I was seeing something the other day. It's a complaint coming up in, you have on the West Coast, you have California, and above that, you have the next state up is called Oregon. And so there's a complaint that Oregon's losing its flavor, the niceness of it, the closeness, the more kind of intellectual, liberal kind of view and personal and acceptance of others' positions and all that, because of too much influx of Californians, you know, specifically Southern Californians, because the Northern Californians around San Francisco, they like that and they just stay there. Not so many of them come up, but it's Southern California that comes up. So they're saying that, you know, they're ruining the Oregon culture. Like that. In fact, it's one sign that says you cross the border. Then I think the sign says, "Welcome to Oregonia." You know, just saying there's so many Californians that it's like California. Right. Does that make sense? So why I'm bringing this out is to show that the idea that your local regional behavior is the universal behavior is not the way it is. You know, so that's the point, is that, and the Californians going up there, they like that everybody's nice and all that, but they want it to be in their own style. So therefore, the whole thing changes. So, right, the Oregonians are upset that the Californians are there, and the Californians like Oregon, but at the same time, they want to make it into California. Does that make sense? You know, New Yorkers, then they'll think that, you know, Californians are out of it, you know, like that. And the Californians will think the New Yorkers are out of it. So there's no, you know, and then the Americans think the Canadians, and the Canadians think that, and everybody mm-hmm. thinks the Mexicans. You know, so, you know, it's just, there is no such thing on the material platform as universal. So therefore, only the Vedic can be universal, but then the specifics of it, then as Lord Chaitanya gives it, and as the Acharyas in his line give it, that's the universal culture. Therefore, if we follow that, that works. And if there's a little flavor in your local culture, it's like Rupa Goswami mentions in the 64 items, offering some favorite item or foodstuff that you have to the Lord, as long as it's bona fide, you know, we're not talking like Limburger cheese or something. You know, then it works, because it's the local regional has its flavor and it's fun. You know, just like for Vatsyayana mentions that when the city people go out on a picnic into the countryside, then for fun they would talk in a local regional dialect. you know, the village dialect. That's the fun. Like, does that make sense? Like, I remember the Australians, when they would come up to Mayapur, that they would love to talk in the outback Australian kind of accent and words and stuff like that. That was, for them, was fun. But when they're in the city and doing their city stuff, they don't talk like that. But when they're, like, on vacation, then they would love to talk like that. Does that make sense? So it's part of the thing. So in other words, so the scriptures acknowledge that, and it's written in as part of the thing that is done. But it's still, there is the universal culture. Right? So therefore, you have the generic, that Vaishnavism is the universal aspect that all souls can relate to. Then you'll have specifics within that. So the Vaishnav process, that always works. And so then you just have the different forms, so the different ages, just how much, like we see with Dhruva Maharaj, then just that short association with Narad Muni, and then he could become perfect. So you have that, is that they're following Guru and the instruction. That's the association. But for us, we need a bit more, because we tend to forget very easily the instruction. Like, we sit through the Bhagavatam class, you know, very nice, contemplative, you know, offer obeisances, walk down the stairs, offer obeisances to the Panchatattva, walk out the door, and there's a good chance we don't remember one word that was there for the rest of the day. You know? Does that make sense? Because as soon as we walk out the door, then we think this or that, or how we're going to walk, or, you know, the ground's too hot, or, you know, who moved my bike, or who parked their thing here, and where's my shoes, and, you know, it's gone. You know, am I going to make it to the Maha shop in time, or will everything be sold out, or, you know, stuff like that. Does that make sense? That's why then, by the society being there, there's more chance we'll be reminded. And so that's why then there's the structure. So the institutional aspect has its importance in that it brings that whole aspect, but we see at the same time Prabhupada didn't like centralization or bureaucracy, because that's then about the institution. It's not about the Krishna consciousness. And if we just say, oh, it's just Krishna consciousness, we don't need the institution, then that goes the other way, because you do. We getting anywhere, or
too many thoughts coming in?
Okay, I was going to say, if the place was enclosed, it'd probably be warm by now, right? So much hot air. So is that, or you think for a while? Yes.
When we are saying in other ages there was organized mission, but there was no institution.
No, there was the mission is there. It's not organized.
Does it mean like they are going for Gurukula, and after that there is not connected to any institution, but here all Brahmacharya
means you have the institution of Varnashram and the various situations were in it, but you don't have to have an institution on top of that to organize those. You know what I'm saying? Varnashram itself can take care of itself. The Bhagavat platform itself can take care of itself. The Pancharatra can take care of itself. So these are all universal aspects that themselves are complete in themselves. Right? Everything that comes from Krishna is complete.
Yes.
Right? So they're complete systems that Krishna has given. So then one can follow those very nicely. Does that make sense? Yeah. But in this age, then we need a bit more, because we tend to, you know, forget all these things. We get distracted by our own desires.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's why then we have the institution. The acharyas that make the institution. That makes sense? You know, so with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you see with him, then he's starting to organize it. Means it's already been mentioned by Srila Rupa Goswami, and then formalized by Jiva Goswami. So he had the Vishva Vaishnava Rajya Sabha. So that was enough for when it's all the same culture and everything like that. But once you're starting to interact with the Western culture, so you're having to go beyond the standard,
then that's where you see Bhaktivinoda Thakur then talks about it, gives the directions for it. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did the first initial aspects of it, like how to set up the temples and the preaching, and then Srila Prabhupada then expanded it beyond that. Does that make sense? So he is the founder then, what he's organized, and that will work for the next 10,000 years. Does that make sense? Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, as they pulled on the churning ropes with their bangled arms, the women of Braja shone with the splendor of their jewels, which reflected the lamp's light. Their hips, breasts, and necklaces moved about, and their faces, anointed with reddish kumkum, glowed radiantly with the luster of their earrings reflected from their cheeks. As the ladies of Braja loudly sang the glories of lotus-eyed Krishna, their songs blended with the sound of their churning, ascending to the sky and dissipating all inauspiciousness in every direction. Footnote 14. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur commenced. The gopis sang the names of lotus-eyed Krishna, which brought about bliss. In a state of separation and lamentation, there would be no application of kumkuma or wearing of colorful clothing and ornaments. Therefore, it is understood that Uddhava, at the end of the night, was seeing the manifestation of Braja with Krishna present there. So when he first came, he was seeing Braja with Krishna. Then when he actually came and was received by Nanda Baba, then he was seeing Braja where Krishna is, you know, where they're feeling separation. And that went through the night and up to this point here. And then after the discussion with Nanda Baba, when Nanda Baba said, you know, sorry, we, you know, in his mind that can't accept that, and it started again. Then he was seeing the Braja again with Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes.
We hear again and again that the residents of Vrindavan, they chant Krishna's glories, and it's mentioned up to this point at least four or five times, you know, Nanda Maharaj and the gopis, and it's all the same pastimes.
Yes.
But for them, there's a taste because it's personal. They, you know, they took part in those pastimes.
Right.
But for us, we get bored often. Like I've heard this, you know, once or twice, like, times, and it's like, you know, it's not tasting there, because for us it's general, it's not personal.
No, it's because we have a taste for something else. In this case, then you have to apply the example Rupa Goswami says about the jaundice, is that we're tasting sugar candy, right? So now if you're tasting sugar candy, if you got jaundice, and you taste sugar candy and it's bitter, are you inclined to eat that 1 kilo of sugar candy that the doctor recommends?
No.
How about if you put it in your mouth and it has absolutely no taste whatsoever? It's not bitter, it's not sweet. You'll take a few more, but you know, you're not going to do a kilo. Right? But now when it starts to taste sweet, then eating a kilo of sugar, rock candy throughout the day is not a problem. I remember before, you get that... And you have a big lump in your mouth, and everyone's, what's that? And, you know, and like that. And you have to say, oh, this medicine. Right? You know, because otherwise you're going to go, why are you eating that? You know, you're a brahmacharya. What are you doing eating that? No, it's medicine. The doctor said, no. You know, it's a whole argument over whether you're supposed to be eating or not. So as soon as you're enjoying it, then immediately, hey, you know, like that. So that's the thing, is that we're hearing the pastimes, but it doesn't have that taste because of the material a distraction, and Krishna hasn't given that taste, but that has be that we're interested in having that view, that perception, that love for Krishna. Then Krishna will reveal that, but we have to be steady in wanting it. Does that make sense? So what we see is that we're not steady in wanting it. So when we do, by Krishna's grace, come across and hear, then it's nice, but then depending on the situation and who's talking and that, because we may have that aspect of in ruchi, that there's two kinds of ruchi. One is where there's excellence of the presentation, and one where there's not. Right? Let's say it's not the kirtan mela. So if the kirtanier that we really appreciate and they're doing a really good kirtan and everybody else is responding very nicely and not being too stupid or something, then we're really absorbed. But if something that we don't like is going on,
then we get distracted. Like that. Well, if the taste is higher, that doesn't matter. Like the example of Hanuman, when he came down, when Lav and Kush were there, he came down to kind of, you know, straighten things out. And they just had all the Gurukul kids go down to the river and do kirtan, though they're not going to be very good at it. And then as soon as he hears Ram Nam, he goes down there, he's sitting there clapping and doing kirtan with them. And so Lav and Kush, you know, don't have to worry about him. Right? So for us, is, you know, in that beginning, if it's really nice and we get that taste, if it's not, we don't. But the point is that we've had that taste and the desire for that is there, though it may not be stable or steady. So the key that you said before, when it's exclusive, that's then when things are the most dynamic. So the occasional, then it's there. And that because the occasional is there, there'll be more of that occasional. But then it has to start turning to regular. It has to become steady. Right? You have to become fixed and then it has to become, you know, deep. The samadhi. Does that make sense? And so then it works very nicely. Right? So, yeah. So the devotees, then they do this wonderful kirtan and all that. But that's not because it's about the kirtan. It's not about the beat. You know what I mean? It's like we get distracted by a few beats. You know, okay, we have the Das Bahira like that, then we may use the half of that, you know, the four beat. Or I mean, the, yeah, that's 16. No, it's 10. 10? No, it's 16, right, whatever. So the shorter forms, like the four beats, like you hear them play in the temple when it goes a little fast, they just play that boom, diddy, boom, diddy, boom, diddy, boom, like that. That's the North Indian beat, you know. So, it doesn't have much sophistication. It's something they can just play. So, then people get going in there, but they don't have that sophistication. So, you have those two, and then they might use the that Dutala beat, you know, the 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, and very rare you get the Jaffi Lofa. You know, it's a, you know, what's a... Nadiya go drumer nityananda mahajan. That has a very different beat. So that's basically the most maximum you hear devotees use. And even two of those are more rare. Like that. But there's so many beats that are there that the acharyas will use when they're sitting and doing kirtan. The shortest beat is 28 beats in it. You know, that's kind of a short one. And they'll do ones that are 48, you know, 32, 48, 64, you know, and doubles of those and, you know, things like that, and to do their kirtans. So the sophistication of the kartals and all these different things are so great. But for them, that's just the medium to express the chanting. They're chanting slow. They can focus on each name. And so, therefore, these things just go along with it to add to the taste. But if our devotees tend to get into those things, then it's all about that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what we have to understand, is that we may be able to come inspired if it has a certain the environment of it we appreciate, therefore we can get into it. Then you have the aspect of, and that, you know, means we're getting purified, but it's not pure enough. But once it gets to more purified, then the same thing's over. Nanda Baba, every time he mentions how Krishna, his position, or how he saved them, which pastimes does he mention? Right. Always the same ones.
Yeah.
Exactly the same ones. So that's the point, is that the taste, because it's Krishna, it's ever fresh. That was the benediction given by Sandipani Muni to Krishna and Balaram, that whatever they speak, whatever they do, it's ever fresh. So it's never... So, in other words, we're the ones that are certified rotten. And Krishna is the one that's certified ever fresh. Does that make sense? So then it's just a matter of that there is any time when we like you said, okay, 1, 2, 5, 10 times, but that 10 times it was nice, that's advancement. We should be inspired. Because previous to coming in Krishna consciousness, it was zero. You know, so now if there is times when we've really been absorbed, really like that, then that's good. So it's just a matter of, with time, that will become more and more prominent. Does that make sense? Yeah, so one doesn't have to worry. It will come. It's just a matter of time. If one keeps in the process, then it does appear. Does that make sense?
The same question, like extension of it, like devotees, the same thing, like because they do not find the taste, because the past times they have heard it a couple of times, therefore what they tend to do is that they refer to the different books of different acharyas and then they try to extract the taste.
Yeah, it means
from that.
You expand it anyway as long as you are, means even you go in and you add different aspects of what the acharyas have brought out and all that. Then at least we're working in that area and trying to give some taste to the holy name. So, you know, I mean, get some taste. So that's nice. But still, it's the points that they're making that itself, because even just one point is enough to keep one absorbed. Right? So it's not that, oh, unless it's technical or this or that, it won't be nice. It's just that is the medium used to express it. So it's not about the technical points or about the facts. It's about the you know, Krishna's relationship with the devotees and the love that's going on there. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that they do that, that's fine. But the point is you can only do that if you can reconcile all that with what Prabhupada says. And if you can't, then better you don't do that. Because mm-hmm. then you get distracted, and then, you know, then you'll have doubts, and then the next thing you'll be off doing some, either, if you're intellectual, you'll be into the academic field, and if you're not, then you'll get off into the political economic field. Because if technical is all that keeps you interested, then you'll go off and get into their speculation. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like that.
Yeah, so maturity is required. You know,
maturity is required. Well, prema is called mature faith.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why then Jarabhara is calling King Rahugana
mm-hmm.
immature.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though he has some faith and understanding of the Lord, it's not very mature. So his dealings aren't very good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we see is that yeah. When the godly sun had arisen, the people of Braja noticed the golden chariot in front of Nanda Maharaj's doorway, right? Because he came at the end of the day. So he came in as the cows are going home and all the dust and all that, and so then they would have gone to their houses and everything, and then he would have gone to Nanda Maharaj's house, so no one would have seen except, so the only ones that knew they were there was Nanda and Yashoda. So, who does this belong to? They ask. Perhaps Akura has returned. He who fulfilled Kamsa's desire by taking lotus-eyed Krishna to Mathura. Footnote 15. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments. The gopis angrily spoke this statement. Mathura was the city of the demon Madhu. It was suitable that Krishna was taken to such a city. Krishna is the form of pure bliss and the Lord of our hearts. He can destroy all pain by his glance alone. Kamala Lochana. Therefore, it is improper to take such a person from Braja to that demon city. Right? Because they'll just look at that aspect of it. He is going to use our flesh to offer funeral oblations for his master, who is so satisfied with his service. As the women were speaking in this way, Uddhava appeared, having finished his early morning duties. Right? So, means they've taken the heart, so what's left is only their bodies, it's only a shell. So then that's the only thing left that Akura can take. Right? So he can take that and use that as offerings into the funeral oblations for his master, Kamsa. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna books. Nanda and Uddhava thus passed the whole night discussing Krishna. In the morning, the gopis prepared for morning arti by lighting the lamps and sprinkling butter mixed with yogurt. After finishing their mangal arti, they engaged themselves in churning butter from yogurt. While the gopis were thus engaged, the lamps reflecting on their ornaments made the ornaments still brighter. Their churning rods, their arms, their earrings, their bangles, their breasts, everything moved, and kumkum of powder gave the faces a saffron luster comparable to the rising sun. Right, so how do you get saffron color? Right, because kumkum is what color?
Red.
Cinder.
Yeah.
And so then what do you get if you have red? What do you have to mix it with to get saffron?
Yellow.
So that means they're golden color. With the kumkuma, you get saffron. Does that make sense? While making sounds by churning, they also sang the glories of Krishna. The two sound vibrations mixed together, ascended to the sky and sanctified the whole atmosphere. After sunrise, the gopis came as usual to offer their respects to Nanda Maharaj and Jashoda. But when they saw the golden chariot of Uddhava at the door, they began to inquire among themselves. What was that chariot and to whom did it belong? Some of them inquired whether Akura, who had taken away Krishna, had returned. They were not very much pleased with Akura, because, being engaged in the service of Kamsa, he had taken lotus-eyed Krishna away to the city of Mathura. All the gopis conjectured that Akura might have come again to fulfill another cruel plan. But they thought, we are now dead bodies without our supreme master Krishna. What further act can Akura perpetrate against these dead bodies? While they were talking in this way, Uddhava finished his morning ablutions, prayers, and chanting and came before them. So the point is they're worried that he's come to do something else stupid. But at the same time, is what can he do? Because if they're just dead bodies, then what can you do with a dead body? Right? Conclusion. Krishna responds in proportion to the devotee's advancement in devotional service. Right? So you see is how Nanda Baba and them, how they're dealing, how Uddhava is dealing, so each one of them gets a different understanding. Thus, as the gopis were thinking of Krishna in separation 24 hours a day, so Krishna was always thinking of the gopis, Mother Jashoda, Nanda Baba, and the other residents of Vrindavan. And so he immediately wanted to send Uddhava to give them a message of solace. Therefore, Krishna is also named Hari, which means one who takes away all distress from the surrendered soul. So, because they're always absorbed in him, then he always thinking of them. He wants to always make it very nice for them. So how to remove their anxiety? That's why he sends Uddhava to give a message. Chapter 47, the song of the bee. Pratigya. Absorption in Krishna consciousness by feeling separation is the quickest method for attainment of the lotus feet of Krishna. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Uddhava, on the order of Lord Sri Krishna, delivered the Lord's message to the gopis, consoled them, and then returned to Mathura. Right? So he came, he spoke to Nanda and Jashoda, and did the best he can, though it didn't actually work, but he did his duty like that. And so now he'll have a discussion with the gopis. When the young maidens of Braja saw lotus-eyed Uddhava, who wore a yellow garment and attractive earrings, they were astonished at how much he resembled Krishna. Thinking, who is this? They approached and encircled him. When they realized that Krishna must have sent him, they brought him to a secluded place where he could speak to them confidentially. The gopis then began to remember the pastimes they had enjoyed with Sri Krishna, and putting aside all ordinary propriety and shyness, they loudly wept. One gopi, while deeply meditating on her association with Krishna, noticed a bumblebee before her. Imagining the bee to be a messenger from him, she said, just as bees wander amongst various flowers, Sri Krishna has abandoned the young girls of Braja and developed affection for other women. The gopi continued to speak in this way, contrasting her own supposed ill fortune to her rival lover's good fortune, all the while glorifying the names, forms, qualities, and pastimes of Lord Krishna. She then declared that although Krishna may have abandoned the gopis, they could not possibly stop remembering him for even a moment. Uddhava tried to console the damsels of Braja, who were so anxious to see Krishna once again. Uddhava explained, while ordinary persons must perform many pious deeds to qualify as servants of Lord Krishna, you simple cowherd girls are so extremely fortunate that the Lord has favored you with the very highest degree of pure devotion for him. Uddhava then related to them the Lord's message. Quoting Lord Krishna, Uddhava said, I am the supreme soul and supreme shelter of all. By my potencies I create, maintain, and destroy the cosmos. I am indeed most dear to you, gopis, but to increase your attraction for me and intensify your remembrance of me. I left you. After all, when a woman's beloved is far away, she fixes her mind upon him constantly. By incessantly remembering me, you are sure to regain my association without delay. The gopis then ask Uddhava, is Krishna happy now that Kamsa is dead and he can enjoy the company of his family members and the women of Mathura? Does he still remember all the pastimes he enjoyed with us, such as the Rasa dance? Will Sri Krishna once again appear before us and give us ecstasy, just as Lord Indra, with his rain, gives life back to the forest, aggrieved by the summer heat? Although we know that the greatest happiness comes from renunciation, we simply cannot stop hoping to attain Krishna, for the marks of his lotus feet are still present throughout the land of Braja, reminding us of his graceful gait, generous smiles, and gentle talks. But all these, our hearts have become stolen away. Having said this, the gopis loudly chanted Lord Krishna's names, calling out, O Govinda, please come and destroy our suffering. Uddhava then pacified the gopis with statements that dispelled their pain of separation, and they in turn worship him as non-different from Sri Krishna. Uddhava stayed in the district of Braja for several months, giving pleasure to the residents by reminding them about Krishna in various ways. Very satisfied at seeing the extent of the gopis' love for the Lord, he declared, these cowherd girls have perfected their lives by coming to the platform of unalloyed love for Krishna. Indeed, even Lord Brahma is inferior to them. The goddess of fortune herself, who always resides on Krishna's chest, could not get the same mercy as that which the gopis attained during the Rasa dance. When Krishna embraced their necks with his mighty arms, what then to speak of other women? Indeed, I would consider myself more fortunate to take birth as even a bush or a creeper that would sometimes be touched by the dust of these gopis' lotus feet. Finally, Uddhava entreated Nandamars and the other coward men for permission to go back to Mathura. Nanda presented him with many gifts and prayed to Uddhava for the ability to always remember Krishna. Returning to Mathura, Uddhava offered Balaram, Krishna, and King Ugrasena the gifts sent by Nanda Maharaj and described to them everything he had experienced in Braja. Right? So, in other words, to remember Krishna, then they're fully absorbed, the ecstasy is there. So that means that aspect that said that for the pastime where he didn't go back, then he's there in his form, in his Bhava Swarup. So just by remembering, then they're absorbed in that ecstasy. And as we saw, is that the devotees, you know, we're happy with that. But only Nanda just showed in the gopis, then they didn't trust that this Bhava Swarup was Krishna directly. But it's the same as associating with him. So you get the same experience, but at the same time you don't feel the physical presence, so they still would feel separation. But the ecstasy they would feel would be the same as if Krishna was present. Because he is in the mood, he's there. Does that make sense? So in this way, these two parallel pastimes are going on. So, yeah. Shloka Anusharanam. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 10. The gopis criticize Krishna. 11 to 21. Srimati Radharani talks to the bee. 22 to 37. Uddhava delivers Krishna's message. 38 to 52, the gopis inquire about Krishna. 53 to 69, Uddhava returns to Mathura. Verses 1 to 10. The gopis criticize Krishna. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said,
The young women of Braja became astonished upon seeing Lord Krishna's servant, who had long arms, whose eyes resembled a newly grown lotus, who wore a yellow garment and a lotus garland, and whose lotus-like face glowed with highly polished earrings. So when they say long arms, it actually means physically long arms. It's not just, you know, you're just glorifying, like saying, you know, how you say, the pyramids touch the sky, you know, like that. No, we're not talking that. It means they actually do reach down to their knees. That's just the way it is. Okay. Who is this handsome man? The gopis ask. Where has he come from and whom does he serve? He's wearing Krishna's clothes and ornaments. Saying this, the gopis eagerly crowded around Uddhava, whose shelter was the lotus feet of Lord Uttama Shloka, Sri Krishna. Right? So, Akrura, then, he's Kamsa's servant. But this person looks like Krishna, is dressed like Krishna, so then they would take it that he must be Krishna's servant. So that they're interested to talk to him. But if it was Akrura, they would walk around. Right? They would not go. Bowing their heads in humility, the gopis duly honored Uddhava with their shy, smiling glances and pleasing words. They took him to a quiet place, seated him comfortably, and began to question him, for they recognized him to be a messenger from Krishna, the master of the goddess of fortune. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, when the gopis saw Uddhava, they observed that his features almost exactly resembled those of Krishna, and they could understand that he was a great devotee of Krishna. His arms were very long, and his eyes were just like the petals of the lotus flower, right? Because one of the aspects of beauty, because the body, it's made out of the elements of mucus, bile, and air, right? So each one of those gives different qualities. So each one of them has a good quality, and each one of them has weaknesses, right? So then individuals generally will be one of those prominent, sometimes two, sometimes three. And it may be that it's a combination of the good points or that may be the weak points or whatever it is. But you see in these great personalities like this, the spiritual forms, they have all the good qualities of all three. Does that make sense? So we see as he has very good intelligence, very quick witted. So that'll be Vata, right? So that means that aspect. But when it comes to eyes, Vata means very small eyes, right? But kapha, which is means you're slow to catch things, but that gives very big eyes. So we see as they have the good qualities of kapha, but not the weak ones. Right? Does that make sense? Or the vata, you know, they have the quick intelligence, but then they, you know, it has other things. Their bones hurt, you know, things like that. You know, so does that make sense? So they have all these good qualities. So therefore, when it says they have these large eyes, they are large. Like that. Now and again, you see people with large eyes. I remember, I think it was one girl in Kazakhstan, huge eyes. They were kind of out of proportion to her face because they didn't have the round, moonlight face. They kind of had the thin, kind of Russian-looking face. You know, they like those thin faces. You know, it's like that. And those big eyes, it didn't quite match. But you see, they have huge eyes. So then when it mentions these qualities, they actually have these qualities. So when you see in the, like, Sharma's paintings and that, those big, long eyes, the style is stylized, but it's not that how it is stylized. Does that make sense? They're actually big like that. Yes?
Okay. What is the good quality of Pitta?
That's a different discussion. Let's say good digestion. For brahmacharis, that's the more important one. Okay. He dressed in yellow garments and wore a garland of lotus flowers. His face was very beautiful. Having achieved the liberation of Sarupya, and thus having the same bodily features as the Lord, Uddhava looked almost like Krishna. In Krishna's absence, the gopis had been coming dutifully to visit Mother Jashoda's house early in the morning. They knew that Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jashoda were always grief-stricken, and they made it their first duty to come and pay their respects to the most exalted elder personalities of Vrindavan. seeing the friends of Krishna, Ananda and Yashoda would remember Krishna himself and be satisfied. And the gopis would also be pleased by seeing Nanda and Yashoda. So by seeing each other, then you see it just increases their devotion. That's why the association of devotees is the important element of the process. When the gopis saw that Uddhava was representing Krishna even in his bodily features, they thought he must be a soul completely surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They began to contemplate, who is this boy who looks like Krishna? He has the same eyes like the lotus petals, the same raised nose and beautiful face. And he is smiling in the same way. In all respects, he resembles Krishna, Shyamasundara, the beautiful blackish boy. He is even dressed exactly like Krishna. Where has this boy come from? Who is the fortunate girl who has him for her husband? Thus they talked among themselves. They were very anxious to know about him. And because they were simple, unsophisticated village girls, they surrounded Uddhava. Because otherwise the sophisticated urban girls, they would stand at a distance, and, how you say, and behave as if they absolutely and totally couldn't care less. Right? But being simple, unsophisticated village girls, then because they were interested, then they came and surrounded him. And like that. So, yeah. When the gopis understood that Uddhava had a message from Krishna, they became very happy and called him to a secluded place and offered him a nice sitting place. They wanted to talk with him very freely and did not want to be embarrassed before unknown persons. They welcomed him with polite words and great submissiveness. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments. They bowed their heads out of humility. Being naturally bashful, they covered their heads with their veils. But the Muslims aren't going to come for another, 4,000 years. How is this possible? So if we take the modern academic approach, that means somebody in a contemporary time after the Mughals, where that became the fashion, then in interpolation wrote this in because they were displeased that it wasn't mentioned. Right? So in other words, the acharyas mentioned in Braja, they cover their heads with cloth. So it may not be popular in other parts of India, like in South, and they'll always put flowers in their hair, right? And so you can say, well, in South they don't cover their heads, but they have flowers in their hair. And they do tie it, right? But they put flowers. So you don't want to put cloth, put flowers. What's the problem? Flowers are nice. You know, or in Vaikuntha, they cover it with a helmet. They're wearing one of those solid gold helmets. So, like that, cloth, flowers, solid gold helmet. Take your pick. It doesn't matter. Right? It matches. It adds to the beauty. So, covering the head with cloth, that's specifically a Braj thing. And I think more in general, a Goloka thing. It's not a Vaikuntha thing. It's not a Kailash thing. So, the devotees are correct that it's not. But we're not interested in Kailash or Braja. Kailash or Vaikuntha. We're interested in Braja. So there they cover. That's why we follow that. Does that make sense? So our dress, our traditions come from Braj. That's why we use it. Does that make sense? So this whole idea is that, no, this was introduced by the Mughals and this and that. There's a good chance they didn't, because if you go to the Middle East and all that, how they wear cloth and how they wear cloth here is different. So this didn't come from the Middle East. Yeah, you understand? They picked up stuff from here. You know, so if you look into the things, what the Mughals are doing, their women dress like the followers of the Vedas. You understand? They didn't dress like how they were dressing in their own places. Does this make some sense? Just to bring it out. So why? Because they're naturally bashful. So when you're bashful, you like to cover your head. Just like if something goes down and you're embarrassed, what's the first thing you want to do? Cover your head. So because bashfulness is a natural quality, therefore, then they're always covering their head. They're just with themselves amongst the girls. They don't worry about it. Right? But when they're there with others who are outside, then that's when they get involved in this. Does that make sense? This bashfulness suddenly appears on its own when they met any respectable person, right? So when they meet any respect, then they cover their head.
It's just the natural thing. So it's just, it's part of the motions and bhavs of that. And if one says, well, we don't have that, that's not a natural thing, fine. But then do we want to develop that? So at least we should appreciate it. So it's not some modern thing. It's tradition. And this tradition goes back to the spiritual world. Thinking that Uddhava must be an intimate friend of their beloved, they smiled and looked at him with open eyes. Right? Because he's a friend, so therefore then being a friend, they can deal in that way. Because open eyes, they weren't, you know, turning away and all that. Because there's a, if there's friendship, then you can deal directly.
Right?
Yes.
I want to cover him up the head. In Rajasthan, they cover their faces completely. So like,
that's another thing. But I'm saying that's a Braj thing that they do there. They're out in public. But it's thin veil. You can still see through it. Not like, we're not talking about a burlap sack here. Right? Yeah. But that's standard. It also is the higher the grade families, then the more they do this. You know, what do you call it? The Maheshwaris and that, they do that more. Like that. And the Agarwals and that, less. They generally do, but you'll see the Maheshwaris that level, then they always do. And greeted him with welcoming words and worshipped him with foot wash and other items suitable to the place. They then asked Uddhava questions in private, unseen by outsiders. By his coming promptly to such a place, they understood that he was bearing news about Krishna, the master of Lakshmi. Sukadev, siding with the gopis, showed some bitterness towards Krishna by addressing Krishna as the husband of Lakshmi. In order to make Krishna happy, Lakshmi will be coming material or coming too mature? She'll be coming too mature. So what purpose could he have in sending messengers to the cowherd women, right? So he's a mature, she's come to mature, so therefore he's the Lord of Lakshmi. Why is he coming out here? Even though they only want him to come out here, as soon as he's got, why are you here? You know, it's just like Draupadi. Like that. It means, of all the Pandavas, who's the most favorite?
Arjuna.
Okay. Then, when after the pastime where Arjuna went out on tour and then he came back with Subhadra, then when he came in to see Draupadi first, then what does she say? Says, what are you doing here? You know, you go. I think, you know, that girl from Dwarka, she must be missing you and all that. You know, you go see her. You understand? That's just how it works. So, therefore, even though they want to see Krishna at the same time as then they're speaking in this way. So that's what's meant by Krishna, the goddess of fortune. You know, the Lord, you know, the goddess of fortune. Does that make sense? Yeah? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Oh, Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Dhamma Vetha Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Nithai Gaura Prima Ki Jai.